this recording from May 2012, Jo McCutcheon shares her observations about America from her perspective as an immigrant from England with some Sunset High School seniors. This is a part of the Cedar Mill Library's ongoing discussion series with local immigrants.
Okay, so my name is Mackie.
My name is Dorothy.
My name is Naomi.
My name is Jo. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Right. So let's start from where you were from.
Yeah, so I'm from England, 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
In January, it'll be the next January, 30 years.
So how old were you when you first came?
26.
26.
Yeah.
And why did you decide to come here?
I met the love of my life in England, and he was American. And he was
all true love story.
It was one of those love at first sight things too. And he was in the Air Force, stationed in England. He was there for 10 years.
Wow.
And I met him 3 months before he was coming back. He was retiring and coming back to the US. So I'm leaving, so you know, don't get attached. No problem. We will just have fun, and it'll be fine. And then he left, and I was devastated. And he called me 3 weeks later and said, "Will you marry me?" I said, "Yes."
I will.
So originally he was going to come back to England and see if he could find a job. But the job situation back then, this was in 1981, and the job situation was not good. The economy was in a downturn, you know, pretty much like it is today. And there really weren't no jobs to be had, especially not for foreigners, right? There weren't no jobs for English people, let alone people who wanted to, you know, immigrate. So we decided that I would come here instead. So we were together 3 months. Took 4 months for me to get a visa, and then we had 90 days to get married. I came on a fiancé visa.
Oh. So you said 90 days. So how does that work? So you have to get married within that
time? Yeah. If you don't get married within that time, you go back to the country you came from. Your visa expires, and then you become legal.
Wow.
So you have to get back on the plane and go. Yeah. Wow. So we got married at like the 85th day. Because you couldn't get time off work.
Right.
Busy. You would call me sometimes and say, "I've got a couple of hours off this afternoon. Will you get married?" And I would say, "No, I'm on a whole day." We actually got a whole day. So finally was able to book it for 85 days, and we had 5 days left to go.
So was it really hard for you to leave your country and come here? Like, I'm sure you have all your family in England.
Exactly. One family's in England. So essentially, yeah, I kind of sold up. I left everybody. I sold everything I had, right? I sold his motorbike that paid for my airfare. I sold all of my belongings and put some in a big box. My dad made a big box, a big wooden box. He was a carpenter. And we put, you know, as much stuff as I could get in that one box, shipped it. And that was, I said goodbye to everybody. And they're saying, "You're crazy. You've only known this guy 3 months. You know, what are you thinking? Are you completely nuts?" But those who knew me well knew, you know, that it was right. They knew it was right. So, yeah, I really miss my family, because back in those days, you could just pick up the phone and talk for an hour, right? Mm-hmm. It was a dollar a minute on the phone. Mm-hmm. We were stuck with letter writing.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No, we wrote lots of letters, long letters, and often, right? So I was a frequent letter writer.
Do they often come visit you, or do you go visit them?
They do, actually. I tend to go there more than they come here, because I was the one that left, so it's incumbent upon me to make the effort, right? That's how they feel about it. So I make the effort more often than they do, but probably, you know, at least once a year I'll probably see somebody, if not everybody. Or they come here. If somebody comes here, then I don't go there. But that tends to be my whole vacation, right? Because we only get 4 weeks vacation, so I tend to use 3 weeks to go there, so that's most of my vacation used. So if I can not go every year, I prefer not to.
So what do you mean you only get 4 weeks vacation?
4 weeks paid vacation, right? It's the max I can get from where I'm working.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
4 weeks paid vacation. So if I keep three of that for, you know, England, then I've got one left for anything else that we want to do.
And that's for the whole year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's only 4 weeks because I've worked there a long time, so you know, it was 2 weeks to start with. That was really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks a year. Versus England, you get, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. Most people have 4 to 6 weeks paid vacation. Much less here when I first came. It's better now than it used to be. I mean, now you can go interview for a job, get a job, start with 3 weeks vacation, which is great. But when I came, it was 2. And then you accumulated 1 more day every year.
So what was did you experience any culture shock coming here for the first time?
Huge culture shock.
Oh, yeah?
Huge culture shock. I thought when I came, right, we speak the same language, pretty much. Right? There are some differences, but pretty much. But I've never been to the US before. When I looked on a map, from England to the West Coast, it's like 5,000 miles, and I'm thinking,
That is so far away. There's not going to be another Brit for, you know, 1,000 miles at least. I'll be all the way out on the West Coast, the only Brit. But actually, when I got here, it's amazing how many Brits there are. There's a big community, but it was a long way, and I really did have culture shock. Some good and some bad, right? But there were some things that I remember that were like really funny to recall, and there are some things that, for a while, I kind of went through a novelty period where everything was new and different, which was fun. And then I went through a kind of period where I felt irritated by everything, right? Not speaking English right, not spelling it right, don't do things this way or don't do things that way. And I became kind of critical. And then I came through that phase and then I became more accepting. And then I found within about 3 years, I was defending the US to anybody that tried to criticize it. So it's like it was a period of grieving away from being away from home, and then an acceptance period, and then a period of, this is my home now, I belong here, and don't anybody else dare criticize this.
Yeah, right.
Okay, for me to do it, but not anybody else.
Arrive. And then why'd you come to Oregon?
So my then boyfriend, now husband, his family was in Oregon. They actually had been all over the place. He wasn't born here, but his parents landed here. And so this was the logical place for him to come back to. And I landed. When I flew from London to Seattle. And I was supposed to fly from Seattle to Portland. And he was going to pick me up at the airport. And I got to Seattle, and it was fogged in. I couldn't get out. And so he had to drive up like me from Portland. When he arrived, he was wearing, it's funny now, right? I told him afterwards, but he was wearing trousers that were too short, right?
Oh,
like shrug.
I was.
And he wore this really old shirt, it was kind of pink and worn. And I thought, didn't look like that when I saw you last. That shirt has to go. Are you going to get some longer trousers? Because I don't quite need. And I was wearing a dress, and he told me afterwards when I shared this with him, I was wearing a dress. That was at the time it was in style, it was like a milkmaid style, right? It just finished here and then it was shapeless, right? It just was shapeless. And he saw me in that dress and he thought I looked like a milkmaid and he thought that dress has got to go. So bit by bit, I changed his wardrobe and he changed mine. So it all worked out.
I was just wondering if you noticed any differences between like English education and education here.
My initial thoughts on education were that when I got here, I felt as though the education wasn't as good as European education. I think that has changed over time. And it was primarily, because of my sense of American English, which is quite different to English English, right, to British English. It seemed as though people had a broader education, but not as deep in subjects that we would do. So, four-year education gives you a really broad, you specialize, but you don't specialize for as long. In England, four-year education, you specialize longer in your specialty than you do here. And so I noticed that when I first got here. I felt as though the vacation time, right, for school holidays is longer here than it is in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I was really amused by that. Thinking, what, you leave mid-June, you don't go back till when? Really? 3 months off?
It's
how do you remember anything?
No, I don't.
How do you remember anything? You've got to really kind of do some study before you come back to remember where you were, right? Whereas, in England you get 6 weeks in the summer, and you get a couple of assignments during that time, so you kind of go on it. But then you get, I think, some holidays in other times as well, where you don't in the US.
Well, I'm curious, so when we learn about history here, we learn a little bit of like the American Revolution, we learn about American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to the British interpretation of that?
Yeah, so we got very little of American history in history class. Actually, I have to I have to admit I really didn't like history because I had a history teacher that was not very interesting.
There's some of those here.
You know, it happens, right? If your teacher doesn't kind of galvanize you to be interested in the subject, you tend to, you know, prefer another subject. So I was never very into history, but it was very much a British biased history. Very little about, you know, American history. Only in as much as we, you know, intersected. Right, so but of course we didn't learn about the Tea Party. I don't remember learning about that in history at school. I don't remember hearing about the War of Independence. You know, I'm sure I picked that up at some later stage. On the other hand, like I said, wasn't that interested in history when I was at school. I was into languages. Languages were my thing, so that was most of my focus.
So what does the majority of England think about America?
Oh, well, they think it's great. I mean, it's just, it's so progressive in so many ways, right? America is the, you know, the huge power. There's a certain pride in that, you know, relationship that England has with America. You know, it's been for a very long time, many years, right? Great relationship from the government side of things, right? It's been an important relationship politically, and everybody thinks of Americans as being friends. And they love, you know, the openness of America. Americans are very open and friendly and warm and inviting, and like the English, right, which is great. So the English always feel very welcome here. So on the whole, now I have to say there's another side to that too. There are some Brits who are not huge fans of foreigners from any country. I won't say they're xenophobic, but there's a huge tendency to think of everybody outside of the island as foreigners. And Americans are known for being, because America's bigger, right, and there's so much going for it, a lot of Brits tend to think that Americans brag a lot, boast a lot, right? And so my husband says, well, it's not boasting if it's true, is it? there's some logic in that. But there's, because America's big, you know, you think about Texans, Texas is big, Texans are big, they talk big, they have big cars, they have big ranches, everything's bigger. And there's a perception on the downside, right? There's the upside and the downside perception that America's bigger and better, and they think they're better than us. So there's some of that comes from. Yeah, but on the whole, I would say America is sort of as a friend.
So then your parents really probably supported you.
They
with
did.
Your boyfriend.
They did, but you know what? They were really mad that I had met an American because they didn't want me to come to America. We were really a small family, just me and my brother, and my father was actually devastated. Mm-hmm. My mother was, you know, she was fine with it. She didn't want me to go, but she said, you know, go with my blessing. But my father was mad at me. Mm-hmm. We're just a small family, and you know, you go all that other way, and it's breaking up the family. You won't see me very often. Well, you know what? I follow my heart. But it was hard to start with. But they came and I let that down, and you know, they eventually became quite, you know, accepting of it and realized that things were, you know, I was having a good life and I was happy, and they, in the end, they were fine with it. So. But making the break.
So do you have family? Like here? Like, do you have children? Or?
You know, so my husband, I don't have my own kid, but my husband was married before, and he adopted the two children from his previous wife. And one of them came here. So his son came after we'd been married like 3 or 4 years. He stayed and got his education there because it was free. Mm-hmm. In fact, he wanted to come earlier, and he called and said, can I come, you know, stay with you all and move to America? And he said, no, get your free education first,
yeah,
and then come, because it's very expensive here, and we don't have the money. So, because I had to sell Gil's motorbike to buy my airfare to come over here, so we had no spare money, right? So he did that, and it was that was a good thing. So he's here now. He has a daughter, who is my granddaughter. She's 17.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we have 2 grandchildren in England, so yeah. So we have some family here, which is great. And his side of the family were here, and they were very warm and welcoming to me. They're gone now, unfortunately. His mother and his sister are both gone, but and they were really, they took me into the family and just made me feel so welcome. You know, they were my surrogate family.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about how like the eating schedule works.
So
when I go in China, they like literally go to the street, buy something off the street because it's fresh. Whereas from in America, they're like kind of packaged, preserved.
Yeah.
For us,
yeah.
How did it go in England?
It's very similar. You know, today is very, very similar. When I left 30 years ago, people really tended to still do the corner shop shopping every day. But so people would go, you know, to the corner shop, get their milk and their bread for the day, and, you know, the vegetables that they're going to cook that day. But, you know, over the years, just as here, with the advent of superstores and, you know, grocery stores getting bigger and food getting cheaper, those little mom-and-pop stores, that, you know, they went away over time, just like they did here. So and the thing about England, the fridges are very small, right, compared to here. So electricity is so expensive. All utilities are expensive there. And so the fridges are much smaller, so they can't put as much stuff, they can't do as big a shop as you do here. Like, I'll shop for a week or two, and, you know, my fridge and freezer are plenty big enough, but you really, some people would struggle to do that in England because there isn't enough space, you know, and they tend to buy more often. And things are in smaller packages, right? Here stuff is in huge packages. I don't know if you find the same in China, but so it is much, you get much bigger packages of food here. Yeah. Think about Costco. Costco's extreme, and I love Costco. There's only two of us, and we can't eat that much food.
Yeah.
Our freezer isn't that big, but there's similar packaged food in England now, ready dinners and all that kind of thing. But they're much smaller. And meal sizes in general are smaller in Europe, generally speaking, rather than America. Meal sizes are much bigger here. I noticed that when I first came. Oh my God, I gained 10 pounds in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, because I've been taught, you know, to eat everything on a plate, because there were starving children in Africa, right? So I had to eat it. And so when I got here, we would go to a restaurant or something.
Portions.
The portions, yeah, massive. But I felt obliged to eat it because I didn't want to waste it. And
mm-hmm.
I gained 10 pounds in 6 months. And I suddenly realized I had to stop this. I joined Weight Watchers. And I lost that 10 pounds. And I learned that leaving it on my plate is okay.
Yeah.
It's better than putting it inside and worrying about it later. Yeah. The portion size is still, you know, very different.
Okay.
I mean,
it's
bigger over there than it used to be, and people are becoming more obese over there. The obesity, you know, issue is the same over there now.
Really?
As bad over there as it is here. Yeah. In Europe in general, yeah, people are, and it's because of the fast food. You know, it's the McDonald's, it's the pizza parlors, it's the all-you-can-eat type. You know, that's the Americanism that they've adopted in England now. There are quite a few restaurants that are all-you-can-eat.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of that till I came here.
Well, I was just wondering because your husband is American and you're not. So, has there kind of been any like conflict with like difference in thinking that just, you know, was just kind of culturally based?
You know, surprisingly, really not. I mean, when we first met, I hadn't met that many Americans actually, but we had the same sense of humor, which was, I thought, unusual, and I still find it's a little bit unusual because he had more of a British style sense of humor, I think, than most Americans do. So he immediately got my sense of humor. Sense of humor is a huge thing for me. I was, in my town, I was always kind of the joke master, right? In my group, my social circle, I always had the latest jokes. And he thought that was hilarious. And actually was able to tell me a joke, which I hadn't heard, but I thought that was hilarious. We think very much alike in many, many ways, you know, kind of socially, politically, with humor. We have very similar likes, amazingly, because we come from such different backgrounds, that we really gel so well. And we've always, 30 years later, like, we're still married, so it worked out really well.
Yeah.
We do think very much alike. We do, thank goodness. It can be a lot of attention there. You get the different backgrounds, meaning that you don't always see it. You approach things from a different way. But we, I think it's maybe because both our families are from similar social backgrounds, similar socioeconomic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So both kind of middle class, you know, maybe lower middle class families that, you know, despite growing up in different places, we were raised similarly. So I think we expect similar things out of life. You know, our expectations out of the marriage and out of life in general were fairly similar. So it wasn't difficult. you know, to be on the same plane. You know, marriage, of course, when you first get married, it's always a bit of a battle, you know, even one's trying to meet the other that wants to meet, you know. So you're always, there's always a kind of a, where's the balance, you know, where's the level playing field thing. You work things out over time, but the first 10 years were hard, and after that, no problem.
That's good to know.
You know, you all sorted that first 10 years, you know, leaving issues out, you sort it out, it's next one. After 10 years, you don't have any more, you're done. Yeah.
Seeing as it's like kind of election season in America, I was curious about government politics in Britain. How is that different than here? I know it's definitely different, the parliamentary system is.
It is different. And I'll tell you from a social point of view, people tend to think in England that really their voice doesn't count. The way it works, right, you elect somebody in your district and they do the thinking for you. Whereas here in America, your voice counts. You tell your constituent what you think, and that counts. And he goes on, you know, and carries your viewpoint forward. And so a voice counts more in America. This is the concept, you know, the general perception. Counts more in America than it does in England. People have a little bit of a sense of, I think maybe it's because the country's very old, right? And they've been governed for so many, many, many years, right? Hundreds of years. And I think there's less of a sense that one person can change everything and I'm going to be that person. Whereas America, right, was forged on the ability to change things. Your voice does count and you can make a difference. And it doesn't matter who your father is or which social circle you came from. You know, you can still be president, which is not the way it is in England. So the government tends to be more the elite, you know, the highly educated, wealthy, upper class, and it mattered who you were born to and who your connections were, and so that's the difference here. One of the things I love about America, you know, it doesn't matter who your father is, if you work hard and really want to do something, you have that opportunity. I don't think I'd ever be doing today the job that I'm doing here. I don't think I'd ever be doing that in England, because, you know, you need to be more categorized. You do this education, that's what you train for, you need to be more categorized. It's less usual to break out and actually go and do something you want to do. So you have way more opportunity here. Yeah. The streets aren't paved with gold like, you know, they said they were, but it still is a land of opportunity. Yeah.
You said that you like languages. Do you mean like you like learning about different foreign languages, or do you like learning the English language?
I always loved the English language, and that was me in college. But I also love other languages, foreign languages. So French was my second language, and I did that from being, I don't know, six or seven. And then German, I picked up German in college a couple of years. And when I got here, I did Japanese for a couple of years, Spanish for a couple of years. Italian for a year. That's it. And I'm going to do Chinese.
Yes. Good luck.
I am. Yes. That's my next. Whenever I get more time in my life. Yeah, because learning the language takes time, right? You've got to be somewhat dedicated to it. I've gone through these, you know, a couple of years doing this, a couple of doing that, and I've loved it. It's been great. You learn about the culture while you're doing that, which is even, you know, better. So it's never a waste of time, but if you don't use it, you lose it. And I've been sorry, you know, that I haven't kept up some of them. French, I think, will always come back because I learned from such an early age. And even though I don't use it today, I think it wouldn't take long for it. I would be immersed in that because it would bring it back up again. But when you do 2 years and you don't follow through, you know, you still have a smattering. I can still go to Japan and eat meals with friends and say that was really tasty, thank you very much, and find my way to the conversation and that kind of thing. But yeah, other than that, I couldn't, and it was 2 years of hard work too, so I'm sorry I didn't have to let it drop. But it's been a great, you know, I feel as though now I'm a person of the world as opposed to, you know, just a Brit in America. And I learned them because I didn't want to go to these countries and not, and feel like a stranger, feel like a foreigner. I wanted to feel like I at least could get by just a little bit, make an effort.
What is that process like for you to get this citizenship? I know there's like a huge thing you have to do.
It is, yeah. So there's a big form you have to fill out. And the worst thing for me was that I've been here 30 years, like, and you know, all that time I've traveled quite a bit, and you have to fill out a form that says how many times you've been out of the country since you were here, where you went, and how many days you've gone.
Oh gosh.
And so that was an Excel spreadsheet, as you can imagine, and I had to, I couldn't actually do it to the degree of accuracy that I'd like to. I had to look to my passport, my old passport, you know, I had to look to my old photograph albums and try to compile as best I could, and I just had to put on the end of this is my best effort to tell you where I've been and how long for, because I honestly can't, you know, I don't have the wherewithal to do it exactly. And they don't always stamp your passport when you come in and out of country, so you know, it's entirely accurate. I think they're mainly looking for, you know, I think they've been spending a lot of time in terrorist countries.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a risk? So I had to go take my fingerprints soon. I actually just got a date for fingerprinting, but I have to reschedule it because I'm going to be working with my work. But otherwise, it's a test. There's 100 questions, there's a little booklet they give you about, you know, the history of America, political, your situation, how Congress is set up, how senators, you know, all the things related to this kind of politics of the country and the history of the country, all the foreign wars, you know, you need to understand where America was in wars and when it was. And, lots of things to learn, but they give you 6 out of 100. You just don't know which. So, but at least you get a bone up.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go in blind or anything. It's, you get to practice your tests before you go in. So don't ever take for granted your ability to vote. It's a great thing. People die for it. Use it.
Yeah.
Especially women. People having the things that women went through to get the vote, it was horrendous. It's really how so passionate we had. So we had to do it.
Is there much of a difference between here and England?
It's an interesting question. People will say to me, it's raining, and I say, oh, it's raining. And they go, come on, you're used to it, you're from England. Yes, but you know what? In Oregon, in particular, in Oregon, when it rains, it can rain for weeks.
Yeah.
Right, without stopping, right? And it doesn't rain like that. It rains. It's an island, so there's always prevailing winds bringing clouds in off the sea from every angle. Right? It depends which way the wind's coming as to what kind of clouds you get, what kind of rain you get. But there are always clouds. But it rains, and then the clouds dissipate, and you get the sun. And then more clouds come in, and it rains. It's on and off again. It rarely, rarely rains for days and days and days like it can here. When it first arrived in January 1982. It was raining when I got here, and it didn't stop for 6 weeks.
Oh,
and I wasn't working because I had a job, right? And I didn't know anybody, and I didn't dare drive because the road—it was on the wrong side of the road. Cars were too big, right? I was too nervous to drive, so I was walking everywhere in the rain in Hillsborough, in downtown Hillsborough, right?
Oh.
And I must have been quite a few shop owners, you know, sort of say, "Oh, hi, back here," because I can't drive anywhere. But I just about at the end of that 6 weeks, I would go anything and go back. But often I would say probably 50 to 60% of the time it's very similar to where I'm from, which is the east coast of England.
Mm-hmm.
So just 80 miles northeast of London, and it's only 10 miles from the coast. It's very, you know, it's very countryside type kind of scenery. It's farming, you know, it's very arable, and. It's very similar. Probably 7 times out of 10 I call my mum and she says, oh, it's a really lovely day today. Oh yeah, it's sunny. You know, oh, it's really rainy, it's cold. So, yeah, same here. Yeah. We often have very similar weather. We're on the same latitude as, you know, where I'm from. So it's that's why it's very similar. Yeah. But I love Oregon. Oregon's a fabulous place, right? Despite the rain. Love it because you're close to the mountain, right? An hour and a half from the mountain, you want to ski. You're close to the countryside, you know, you need to get in your car and drive for 15 minutes, and you're out in the open now.
Yeah.
And you're close to the beach, an hour and a quarter to the beach, which is, you know, you've got all the best things. And the desert, 4 hours away, but high desert,
yeah.
Which is another different climate. when I bring my family from England, when we first came, and we did the Oregon Loop, right? We went from Hillsborough to the beach, to the desert, up over the mountain, and back again. They were amazed. Like, we've been through four different microclimates. That's amazing. In one state, right? It's just one state.
So what's it like living in kind of a suburbia area for you?
I was a bit of a suburban really in England too. I mean, I was born in the city and raised in Nottingham actually, which is right in the middle of England. I was raised till I was 14. So I was a town mouse. And then I was uprooted and moved to the country, which I hated to start with. Oh, I hated it. Oh my gosh. I had to walk a mile and a half to get the bus, you know, whereas the bus used to be right outside my doorstep. My friends were all, you know, on my doorstep. And the school was, you know, miles away, and it was hard for a 14-year-old town mouse to get into the country, but over time I really grew to love it, and now it's my preference. I love the countryside. I love the town, but I really like the countryside. And I'd like to have some acres of land looking around the countryside. Yeah. So it's fabulous here. Go to Europe, it's very indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to some extent they don't get paid quite as well here, so people are, you know, they need tips. Everybody tips everybody here, right? It's a big thing. In Europe, you don't tip quite as much. People tend to earn living wages working in restaurants, you know, whatever kind of service industry, right? They tend to earn more of a living wage. So they're not so dependent on tips. But I think you really get better service because of it. That's my theory anyway. But it is great customer service. Whenever I go back to Europe, after about 3 weeks, I can't wait to get back. Have somebody be nice to me in the store. and be nice to me in the restaurant. And give me choices in the restaurant. I love having choices. I mean, they literally order something, and it comes. They don't ask you, how do you want it? Or, you know, how do you want this? Or do you want this, this, or this? You simply order it, and it comes. And you eat it. And that's it. When I first got here, when I landed in Seattle, and my husband now, then you know, boyfriend, picked me up, we were driving down, we stopped at a restaurant on the way down, and we ordered something, and there were questions about what I'd ordered, and I was totally bemused. Why are they asking me a question? I don't understand. It was so complicated. Like, I just want food. I just want that. I'm hungry. but I loved it because there was bottomless coffee, and I'd never heard of, what does it mean? It said bottomless coffee on the menu. And I said to him, what does that mean? And he said, that means you can have a refill. You can have a refill for free? But yeah, really? No, you're kidding, right? He said, no, you can, really? So I thought, I'll try this. So I got my coffee and I waited, and the waitress came over and she said, like, what coffee? She poured it nice. Sure, she's not going to charge me? I said, no, she won't charge you, it's free. Most amazing thing, I couldn't get over it. And bottomless coffee. And so when my family first came to visit, when we got married, they came over, we got married in, you know, within 90 days with Justice of the Peace, and then 3 months later they came over, we had a proper wedding. And so we took them to a restaurant and they had bottomless coffee, and they were amazed too, and they just couldn't drink enough coffee. Because it's expensive in England, and you pay twice and you have two cups.
Well, thank you so much.